You're listening to Chris Farrell's On Watch podcast from Judicial Watch.
I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Welcome to On Watch, everybody. Chris Farrell, the Director of Investigations and Research here at Judicial Watch. Thanks for joining us for this show. We go behind the headlines to cover information the mainstream media would rather you not know about. We also try to recover some lost history and explain the inexplicable. Today, I am very pleased, very honored to have joining us Representative Clay Higgins of the 3rd Congressional District of Louisiana. Congressman Higgins, welcome to On Watch.
Yes, sir. It's an honor to be here.
Great to be with you. And I know that there's a bunch of Judicial Watch fans out there, whether they're watching us on the video version of this or the audio streaming, who know you and respect you and admire you. You're a Judicial Watch kind of guy, and we're very pleased to have you here with us to join us on our podcast. A few things that are kind of headline things you can't get away from, big issues, big topics.
Yes, sir.
Before we came in to the studio here, we just found out that the U.S. District Court, the appellate court in here in D.C., ruled, the three-judge panel ruled that President Trump does not have immunity. Of course, that's going to go to the Supreme Court immediately. But if that's the ruling, does that mean that we can prosecute President Obama for Fast and Furious? I mean, I'm kind of being facetious, but you get my drift on this question.
Well, presidential immunity or any executive immunity, it should fall under the within the realm of, from a reasonable man's perspective, what should be protected communications and what should not. And so the threat to President Trump is, you know, never going to go away because the left is determined for this man, you know, who I fully support. They definitely don't want President Trump to win a third election. So that's not going to stop their persecution of, yeah, of President Trump. The real threat is for a future president. And this is what all of America should be concerned about with the with that particular angle that they're pursuing against President Trump is, you know, what would that mean for a future president if he cannot have private consultation that he would know was forever protected,
right,
you know, by the sanctity of his role as president of the United States and the chief executive of our executive branch and the leader of the free world. If you cannot have protected private conversations and seek counsel, then the implications of what that would mean for future executives is quite alarming. So I think ultimately we defeat that particular threat within the parameters of our judicial system. And it may have to go to the Supreme Court, but all Americans should be concerned about what the repercussions would be in the coming generations if we were to lose that fight.
Yeah, I think every time you switch political parties, the new president could, in theory, prosecute the last president. I mean, that's the, you're getting this tit-for-tat, gotcha last kind of mode where, I mean, I facetiously, not really, but kind of half-heartedly said, you know, you could prosecute Obama for Fast and Furious. You could certainly prosecute him, you could argue, for non-judicial killings. He was a big fan of drone strikes.
He loved drones, didn't he?
He loved drones, and yeah, there's American citizens who he ordered drone strikes on, Anwar al-Awlaki, and then later his 16-year-old son. And you could say, well, they're bad guy terrorists and they're hanging out with terrorists. I get that argument. But all I'm saying is you open up the door to gotcha last, second guessing, you know, kind of 2020 hindsight.
Yes, sir.
It's disastrous.
And just the, you know, the general deterioration of what, you know, a president should be able to consider as like the sacred trust of communication,
right,
with his closest counsel.
Right.
To think that a president might have to restrict his conversations and counsel based upon some concern about future review and prosecution, That is not a path that as a free nation, we should embrace. So yeah. I would hope that all ideological perspectives would recognize the importance of defeating this particular judicial attack against this particular litigation against President Trump, because those are not going to go away.
Right.
But this one is one that the nation should be concerned about, and I'm confident that we win in the end. But to think that such a threat can exist and could actually happen is alarming for someone that loves his country.
I agree with you. Let's shift to more breaking news. The Senate border bill, the so-called deal. This is one of the worst deals I've ever seen. But there's, you know, it really should have been called the Senate, you know, insecurity or border insecurity bill. It looks like it's dead on arrival. It looks like it's going to be dead getting out of the Senate. What's the inside baseball on this? What is the, within the bowels of Congress, what in the world are they doing? What is the game that they're up to? Explain it for Americans who don't get it, don't know what's
okay.
going on.
So our staffs, if you've been in Congress long enough to have an established staff, and if that staff is dedicated and professional and diplomatic and courteous and focused and driven by core principles, and then your staff earns a reputation amongst other staffs across the House and with our colleagues in the Senate.
Sure.
We're always working on constituent services together and companion legislation between the House and the Senate. So the point is, even though this so-called border security bill out of the Senate was not fully released until last night, we pretty much knew what it would look like a week and a half ago.
Well, because they were leaking it out.
Well, because your staffs were talking.
Right.
I wouldn't put it in the realm of leaks, because there's nothing wrong with respectful back channel communications, shall we say?
Okay.
And if you have a solid staff, then you're going to get solid data. And if they're talking to a staffer, then they'll know that trust won't be betrayed, and they can expect that level of confidentiality, office to office. So the bottom line is, we pretty much knew what this thing was going to look like last week. And that's when I came out in full opposition to it, even though the text had not been released. And it essentially, two things. One, the Senate thought they could jam us on this.
Right.
And this was this is what we would call in law enforcement a boot in the chest to the Senate. That, like, no, you're not going to run over. Not going to run over the Freedom Caucus. You're not going to run over Mike Johnson, who is a deeply principled man. I mean, he has to deal with what he has to deal with. That's another conversation. but he starts the day at the right place.
Right.
Mike Johnson's a good man. So the Senate has muscle memory of dealing with Congress's past in recent history, and they just felt they could write this bill and sell it to the media and use their power and influence
right.
and jam it on the House
and pat you guys on the head.
Would have to bring it up, and then it would get, you know, what they call, you know, broad bipartisan support, and, you know, confused Americans across the country would go, yay, and it would be a terrible bill
right.
advancing the agenda of the left. Now, as that relates to border policy, what the left wants is essentially no border. They want a European-style sort of migrant crossing zone that would allow undocumented and aliens and children of God with no visa to just cross into America and pretty much do what they want, for as long as they wanted, and
right.
go back and forth. This is what.
That's their dream.
That's just their dream. That's the agenda.
Yeah.
So every time the left introduces, and when I say the left, I guess we have to include my establishment Republican colleagues.
Yeah, that, there's rhinos that they, and squishes out there that,
You said squish, not me. So
hang it on me. It's fine.
We have to include them, but they want this growth of government,
right.
Whether it's Democrat controlled or Republican controlled. The establishment wants the continued growth of government, and how do you get the continued growth of government in a representative republic where you have a bicameral bipartisan Congress? Then you have to shift majority control to liberal representation. How do you do that? Census by census.
Right.
So the plan was to bring in 25 or 30 illegal immigrants from the 2020 census to the 2030 census, so that when we conduct the 2030 census, the apportionment of congressional representation will be shifted
substantially
to densities of population that were more likely to be Democratic leaning. So the border policy is not a short game from the Biden administration. It's reflective of their agenda to permanently shift American society into the liberal spectrum.
And for perspective, the number of persons, at least the ones that you can kind of ballpark, let's say 7 to 8 million. That's probably a conservative estimate since Biden came in. That's Virginia.
Right.
That is the population of Virginia. So you've brought an entire state into the union. Now, how that's apportioned and where they go and how that's counted. But just to give people a notion of, well, that's a lot of people. What does that mean? That means you've brought Virginia into the country.
Right.
And how does that translate? And it actually waters down, arguably, your franchise. Your vote is diminished in a way because you've artificially inflated numbers. And those persons who are native-born citizens with the right to vote are now have persons in the country unlawfully present who shouldn't be voting. Many of them do. That, it's corrosive. I mean, it tears at the fabric of the country.
Yeah, it shifts the representation of principle away from traditional American values and rural-based principles deeper into larger representation of say blue densities of population,
right.
urban population. So, Mama never worried about us if we were going down the road to hang out with our country boy folks. But if we were going into the city,
yep.
This was
different story.
You call and go to your aunt's house and give us a call when you get there.
Yeah.
And, like, parents get concerned when
right.
kids go into the city.
Yeah.
Then they're not concerned if they're going to a bonfire in the country. So I'm just saying that this shift of representation is based upon apportionment of congressional representation, which is based upon the census and the population count. So if you have a 10-year plan to introduce, forget about voting, because Democrats will be quick to tell you, we're not trying to have these people vote.
That's a lie, by the way.
That's a lie. That's yeah. a lie. But yeah. we don't even have to go there. Just look to apportionment. And if you bring in, I mean, it's been 10 million, by the way, in 3 years.
Right.
If you bring in 10 million illegals in say one presidential term to be conservative, then you're on track to bring in say 25 million illegals into the country in a 10-year period.
Right, so
before the next census.
Right.
So those 25 million people are going to be drawn to the sanctuary cities and areas and blue areas that are waving them in. So that's where those illegals will go.
Right.
This is where the census will count them. And the apportionment of the next census will therefore reflect increased populations in those areas. and you'll have more Nancy Pelosi's and more AOC's and and more Chuck Schumer's,
right,
you know, popping up across the country to come in this bizarre realm of D.C. and destroy the future of our country.
I mean, we're so laughing, but it's
we have to stop the Schumer bleeding, my brother, at the southern border.
Yep.
And all we need is policy, by the way.
Correct.
It's not money, if I may touch on that.
That's not money, and it's not law. It's policy.
It's policy. It's enforcement of existing law, and it's not about money. We gave DHS in $81 billion in 2019, and we had the border under control. Trump policies were working, very effective. We had the opposite of what you're looking at now. It's like a third world country in parts of our southern border.
Yep.
Absolute, you know, disintegration of our sovereignty. So 2019 would be the best practices model to look at.
Right.
And we spent less money, a lot less, $20 billion less, because last year we gave $101 billion to DHS, and we have invasion. So it's not about money. It's about having a president that drives an America First agenda, and secretaries that enact
Correct.
America First command. So when you have a president that's pushing a liberal agenda to disintegrate our border and to willfully and purposefully bring in millions and millions of illegals for a darker purpose, which we've discussed, and you have a Secretary of Homeland Security who is determined to enact that agenda through his command, through violation of federal law,
yep,
allowing hundreds of thousands of known criminals, violent criminals, into our country, releasing them into our country where they've moved out across America and plugged into the existing criminal networks of our nation. This is why you're seeing unbelievable rates of violent crime and property crime, sex trafficking, drug trafficking, violent theft and burglaries happening across the country.
And the number one killer of Americans 18 to 45?
Opioids. Opioid poisoning. It's difficult to call it overdose because, a lot of these kids dying, my brother, you know, they're doing something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah, but they don't even know what they're doing.
But it was not with like criminal nefarious intent
Correct.
To injure themselves. You're not talking about drug addicts. You know, most of these kids that have been murdered by fentanyl overdose, because I would call it murder by their dealer, you know, knowingly giving out hits of
counterfeit,
you know, pills that look like
right.
Xanax or whatever.
Right.
And again, those young Americans shouldn't be doing that. But it shouldn't carry a death penalty.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And the number one cause of death, therefore, of Americans 18 to 45 is now, for the last 3 years, since Biden's been in office and since Alejandro Mayorkas has been the Secretary of Homeland Security, is poisoning from fentanyl and meth opioids.
For our viewers and listeners who aren't familiar with your background, you have a tremendous law enforcement background that begins in the Army as a military policeman at a young age, just a few years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
But you know as well as I do that absolutely nothing crosses that border without the consent, permission, or a percentage that goes to the cartels.
Right.
Nothing crosses the border
without
the cartels.
Yeah. Like, there's cartels control 100% of the Mexican side of our southern border.
Correct.
You just have to get that reality. You know, it's difficult for us to grasp as a law-abiding citizenry primarily, and, you know, we have a tendency to think the best of our nation state allies, certainly our contiguous allies in Mexico and Canada. It's difficult to grasp the fact that cartels control 100% of the Mexican side of our border. And they traffic two things, human beings and drugs.
Yep.
So human beings and drugs come north and cash goes south. And so they're pumping hundreds of thousands of teenage girls and boys into sex trafficking, something we've never seen this before. As a law enforcement professional with a long background, you know, you deal with the ugly underbelly of yep. Of our fellow man, and you see that on the horrors that that children of God face as individuals to overcome just the elements of their life and their addictions,
sure.
and the mistakes that they've made in their life. And I believe in those people. I believe in redemption because I'm an unapologetic Christian, and I believe in the redemption of man.
Amen.
If we seek the blessing of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, make no apologies about that. So I'm not being judgmental about those children of God that get pulled into crime. But when you're dealing with numbers like this, it becomes an overwhelming force that no reasonable man would suggest that a lone individual would be able to break free of. So not only have we allowed a generational trauma to be brought into our country, wave upon wave of human misery and crime, drug trafficking and sex trafficking. Not only have we allowed that to the great detriment of our own country, but we have brought unspeakable grief and an undeniable spiritual destruction
yep.
into the lives of these millions and millions of
all their families.
Of people. That's right. Yeah. All these families that are themselves impacted by the cartel trafficking.
For all that we've discussed in the last 5 minutes or so, why should Americans care more about Ukraine's border than ours?
Well, obviously the easy answer is we should not. But that doesn't mean we don't care about Ukrainian people,
right.
and that we don't support the right of every man across the world to stand and fight for his rights and his freedoms. I 100% support the right of Ukrainian free citizens to stand and defend their sovereign soil.
Yep.
So I'm just saying that I'm not voting to send them any more money. And it's not that I'm opposed to helping our allies, because, you know, I certainly recognize the role that America plays worldwide. We have allies in very significant theaters of engagement where we have American interest involved. And so, of course, we have a role in supporting our allies across the world. And I would count Ukrainian people amongst that number, but I want accountability of the money
and, there hasn't
and the
been.
Equipment.
There hasn't been. Yeah.
So there had been package after package after package brought through since 2022, and I supported the first one. If you look at the votes, I've been a no since that first vote.
Right.
Why? Because conservative Republicans, good sir, cautiously entered into agreement to support that initial American treasure to be dedicated to Ukraine's sort of early defenses against the renewed invasion, which started in 2014. That's another story.
You can walk it all the
way back. Walk it all the way back,
too.
But
yeah.
that's another show, another day. So we were assured that there would be accountability. There was a gentleman's agreement between conservatives like myself and, say, other members of the Freedom Caucus that we would support Ukrainian supplemental assistance, American treasure that we did not have, 100% deficit spending.
Yeah.
But we would do that.
We're getting it from
we
the
would
Chinese
do that as a beacon of hope and support for for freedom across the world, and has a strong message that that we stood on behalf of the defense of freedom. But it came with a deal that this money would be accounted for. Not only was it not accounted for to the level that we were assured, they don't know where any of that money went. Like none of that money and equipment was properly accounted for, and we put a lot of pressure on the Biden administration to begin performing in that aspect, to report to Congress
right.
effectively and professionally and with transparency of what was happening with this American treasure, and they have not performed. So this is why I'm a no on Ukraine, despite the fact that I spiritually and on principle, I stand with the defense of freedom. Does that make sense?
You're 100% correct in my estimation. You hit the nail right on the head. Even at Ukraine has to get its act together. I mean, this is tough love. Even if you're 100% for Ukraine in all respects and you want to give them all the money in the world, for their own benefit, they need to clean house, straighten things up, stop the corruption, have accountability, have an effective fighting force. And those things aren't happening.
Yes, sir, I agree.
I want to talk to you about January 6th, but I want to stay in the military world for a second. Both of us are Army veterans. I saw a clip of you discussing what it really means to be a member of the armed forces. And there's a lot of distractors right now. And so I was taught, and I believe, that the mission of the Department of Defense is to identify, close with, and destroy the enemy, period. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on, but when you boil it all down, identify, close with, and destroy the enemy, that's what it's about. And so you're either building combat power, you're either increasing that and improving that, through training, through equipment, through all sorts of things, that you're increasing combat power, or you're a distraction from our ability to deliver lethal force on target. And in my view, there's a whole lot of distractions right now. There's all kinds of weird fun and games. It's cultural Marxism is what is really being injected into the military.
It's pretty bad.
And you know better than most. And you've been on both sides of the deal here. You've been a soldier in the big green machine, and now you're sitting in Congress. What's your greatest concern about what's going on in our military with all this weird cultural Marxism?
So my greatest concern is that our military won't be able to recruit, train, and perform because the American families have stepped back from encouraging our young men and women to join the Army.
And it's a family thing.
It's a family thing.
Because I'm the...
So the southern states...
Generationally, you have people going into the military
that's
from
right.
families. I don't think everybody appreciates that, but it really is kind of a family...
It's a... Well, they're looking at it now.
Yep.
Because for the first time ever, they're unable to fill recruitment goals by a lot.
Right.
You know, when you miss a recruitment goal by 40%, we're in a bind.
Right.
Because what are you going to do as you look at a 4 or 5 or 8 year window of where those soldiers would be if you recruited them now, and what position would they hold, what rank would they hold, what role would they perform in a well-oiled military machine. And so the absence of them is more than just, well, we're not checking the box this year, but we'll do good next year.
Right.
Like there's an ongoing impact when you fail to recruit and fill your ranks. And the reason that is happening, as I talk to families across the country, and I'm a pretty good listener. I was raised right. I'm the seventh of eight children. I have six sisters. And, I had a wonderful mom and dad, and just my family taught me to be a good listener. So in paying close attention to American military families across the country, there's been a distinct, like a a conscious decision by families to hold back their 18, 19-year-old, 17-year-old
right.
from joining the Army or from at, you know, they start at 12 pursuing a, you know, military academy appointment. That takes years yep. of dedicated effort for the that young American has to be perfect in their life and their social life and their school and their athletic performance yep. in order to make it into a military academy. So the amount of work that it requires to fill those ranks, both enlisted and our officers' ranks, it calls for families of dedicated focus towards getting that young American ready or supporting that young American if he decides to join the Army coming out of high school or something like that. And most of the families that have decided to caution their young son or daughter from joining has been because of the social engineering crap that they're witnessing and observing.
Right.
I mean, it's so wrong-headed to think that you want to encourage to have statements like, "Well, we want to have an army that looks like America." Man, what the hell is that supposed to mean? That's why it's called uniform for a reason. man, none of us cared right. in the army what your culture was, your heritage, the color of your skin, what your religion was.
Yep. We're all green.
None of that. Yep. We were all you wore the same uniform. We were trained with the same equipment. We had our role to play. And all we needed out of you as a soldier was to do your job and perform. We cared not about anything else. And we became a brotherhood, renewed every cycle of training through every boot camp. You know, the Army's deep culture
of
brotherhood and support
yep.
was rebuilt and restored. And for 240 years, it's been working like that until these idiots showed up in charge and said, "Oh, we want to encourage this diversity of culture." No, I'm sorry. I had to explain to one of my colleagues a few weeks ago. Army training requires discrimination. You must discriminate
right.
against the guy that cannot shoot or,
do the job.
Or perform
exactly
versus the guy that can. Yeah. It's all performance-based.
It's not how you feel
it's
about
it. It's not how you feel about them. It's not what your emotions are. It's not about what color are they or right. what their background is or yeah. whether they were rich or poor. Man, can you run, fight, and shoot and follow orders? Then you're in the Army. Yep. If you cannot, then I'm going to discriminate against you
yeah.
and you're out.
You might have an exciting career. You know,
yeah, doing whatever.
Flipping burgers, whatever
no
it is.
Problem, or
go someplace else.
You go be an attorney and come to Congress.
Exactly.
But you can't be in the Army unless you can perform. So
right.
we have to fix it, or what's going to happen is in a decade, within very quickly, you won't have your NCOs. See, this is the problem. This is the big problem. Like, if we have conflict and you have to fill your rank and file with relatively new recruits. We can do that by drawing forces from, you know, our reserves and our National Guard, and we can respond to, say, in one theater of engagement, a large conflict.
One.
We need to be able to respond to two.
Plus.
Okay, yes.
Yep.
Plus smaller conflicts.
Right.
That's actually what the code says. But the point is, the real problem would come in the effectiveness of that force that you manage to get warm bodies to fill if you don't have your NCOs that have 8 or 10 years of experience.
Correct.
Because that's the salt of the Army.
Correct.
Man. These are the men and women that are going to make your mission successful
or
not.
They're
going to bring your young men and women home yeah. safe from that mission, and we're going to identify, seek, and destroy or arrest the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my biggest concern regarding this current insanity of willfully destroying the effectiveness of our military with woke crap.
January 6th, you gave a very good, very interesting interview to our friend Tucker Carlson. And I was hopeful. I mean, the stuff you were saying about, hey, you know, you're getting to the truth. It's not easy. It's not fast. But you're getting there. And some of the truth is quite disturbing. And there's tangents to it. So you can look at what was going on in the Capitol. And then our good friend Darren Beatty over at Revolver News has done some reporting on these crazy pipe bomb stories in front of the DNC and the RNC. So there's like bits and pieces that are coming out. Judicial Watch has filed a lawsuit, a wrongful death lawsuit out in San Diego on behalf of Aaron Babbitt, who's the widower, the husband of Ashley Babbitt. And he's owed answers. And I mean, there's all kinds of angles here. I'll let you talk about whatever you want to talk about. But one thing I think I'd kick off with, and this is, goes to your law enforcement experience, mine is when there is an officer who has shot a civilian, there's a process and a procedure that's followed to evaluate whether that shooting was righteous or justified or whatever you want to call it. But there's a process, and in the case of Lieutenant, now Captain Byrd, who got a medal for what he did, he shot Ashley Babbitt, the only homicide that day, and it doesn't appear to me that any kind of regular procedure was followed on that shooting. I just say that as kind of a, I'm tossing matches at you. I kind of want to get your impression. Maybe you have something to update from when you talked to Tucker. Talk about January 6th.
So, regarding the topic of reveal of truth, it's painfully laborious to get it out right now, but that can change in one election cycle. And for instance, I mean, if we had President Trump in a White House, the full reveal would happen very, very quickly. Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, is a deeply principled good man and a brilliant constitutionalist attorney.
Right.
He's a friend of mine like a brother. And he wants to release the full truth. And I respect what he's going through as he evaluates exactly what is legal and ethical and appropriate for him to release. So I fall short of being judgmental on that process. I trust Mike is doing his best to get the full truth out. Me, I'd have released it all in 10 minutes.
I'm shocked.
like attorney, whatever. Release it now, you know. So I deal with you guys in court. But the truth is in the evidence, always in an investigation.
Right.
The truth is in the evidence. And so there should be anyone that's seeking truth, liberal or conservative from any ideological perspective across any land and any country, if they're talking about January 6th and what led up to the events of January 6th, January J4, 5, and 6, as I call it, what happened in 2020, how it's tied together with the some bad actors within our federal law enforcement agencies and with very high positions of authority and power within our country and our government. Like what happened in 2020, how that all ties together with the election cycle and COVID and election interference by government officials prior to November 2020, all of that. All of that is tied together with what actually happened on January 6th. But if people seek truth, then they should seek the release of evidence. when you're talking about evidence of this scope, we're talking about, you know, 70,000 hours of digital evidence. There is no single staff, good sir, that's large enough to go through that, frame by frame, minute by minute. The only staff that exists that can handle it is the American people. So if my brother and sister Americans across the country, liberal or conservative, if you share me in seeking truth, then you should seek the full reveal of this evidence. And then let the chips fall where they may. Now, some of us have been privy to some of that evidence that most of the country has not seen. So it's like if you've read the whole Bible, you know the ending and we win.
Exactly.
So
right.
It gives you great confidence. This is where faith is born, right?
Right.
So when I say I have faith that my position on what actually happened in 2020 and through the election cycle and in the weeks leading up to J4, 5, and 6, and then what has actually happened since J6 with the persecution of Americans who were entrapped into behaviors that they likely would not have involved themselves with had it not been for the influence of bad actors within within the FBI and other agencies, and the incarceration of those Americans and the prosecution and sentencing of those Americans has been extreme. It's not beyond the pale to call those J6 prisoners hostages.
Certainly political prisoners.
I didn't come up with that, but I raised my eyebrows to it because I thought, you know, that's a pretty accurate description of what J6 political prisoners have had to endure. It happened in our own country. So ultimately, for the answers of J6, good sir, I seek truth. And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
What American would oppose the reveal of truth like that?
What do you think of your January 6th committee colleagues who destroyed evidence?
Well,
transcripts.
I don't think very much of them do.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine you would, because that seems deliberate and
but much
malicious
to their chagrin. Much to their chagrin, we have our own evidence, and it's voluminous.
Yep.
And ultimately, you know, it may take 5 years, might take 8 years, might take three, might take 10, but ultimately, as the gentleman said long ago, the truth shall out.
Yep.
And we'll see.
Do you know about the, have you followed closely the crazy story of the supposed Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping case out in Michigan?
Yeah, that had some, there were some indications that, according to the evidence, that there was some entrapment there. And it followed a disturbing and familiar formula that our federal government employs now.
And the special agent in charge of the Detroit office that ran that case, a week after the arrests were made, and it was about 14 FBI agents or confidential human informants who recruited 12 actors. You can do the math on that, 14 recruiting 12. The special agent in charge of that Detroit office, do you know what his next assignment was immediately following?
No, sir.
He became the deputy director of the FBI for the Washington Metropolitan Police.
Yeah, why not? They just promote
D'Antuono.
These guys.
D'Antuono is the gentleman.
It's amazing.
So October 2020, he's in Detroit running the Gretchen Whitmer fednapping case. And then by the end of the month, he's here in D.C., end of October 2020, running the D.C. office.
With a beautiful promotion.
And then, you know, there's instances or questionable things about who was inside the Capitol when, and there's just a lot of unanswered questions is what I'm saying.
Well, and we should seek answers to questions.
Yep.
And we should not be called crazy
just for
seeking those answers.
Exactly.
I don't want to go move past J6 and Ashley Babbitt's death.
Okay.
Because you asked a significant question there. And
right.
I don't want it to appear to your audience that I just moved past that. It's uncomfortable. But again, sometimes truth, you know, calls for courageous review.
Yep.
And the Ashley Babbitt shooting, in my opinion, and I've spoken to, I've watched available video and listened to audio, and studied that thing very, very, very carefully, including at the scene itself, you know, foot by foot, inch by inch, reproduction, because I mean, I happen to work there, right?
Sure.
So I've had plenty of time to review that. And in my opinion, it was not a clean shoot. And therefore, one, you know, we would expect that there would be the appropriate actions taken after a shoot like that. Because, you know, our job, there's a big difference between, speaking of our military backgrounds, I mean, in the Army, you identify the bad guy, you shoot him, right?
Amen.
You don't do that in the police department. In the police department, you identify the bad guy, you cultivate your evidence, you put together your probable cause, you present it to a judge, and the judge signs your warrant for arrest, you go find a guy and arrest him. Like, you don't shoot him. So yeah. There's a bad guy, shoot him.
I think you've said in Ashley Babbitt's case, you grab her, you zip cuff her, and you put her in the corner.
Throw in the corner. That's it. So there was
we'll
no
get
effort.
To you later.
Exactly. So there was no effort made to effect arrest. And it was clearly a situation where the officer on point there were several. If they wanted to arrest Ashley, then by all means, you know, pull her through from one direction or another.
Yep.
She was had they had police on the other side of the glass. There was police on the shooting side of the glass. They could have pulled her through from either direction and zipped her up and threw her in a corner.
Yep.
And you move on. We're kind of busy here. We're dealing with insanity out here. So we're not sure what's going on, ma'am, but we'll get to you later. But you don't have to shoot her. And in fact, you cannot, according to our deepest training and our oath, you cannot just identify someone that needs to be arrested and shoot them.
Right.
That's not the way things are supposed to work in America. And yet that happened, you know, on the hallowed ground of our Capitol. And I do believe that ultimately Ashley Babbitt will receive justice. And I don't pretend to be able to define what that means, good sir. But I have faith, you see. Even though we pointed out so many things wrong with our system, I have issues, obviously, with our DOJ and our FBI, and I have issues with the Pentagon. I believe in these systems because I have faith in my knowledge that America is an anointed nation.
Amen.
Therefore, the institutions of government born of an anointed nation, at its deepest core, is salvageable and capable of redemption. So I didn't want to bypass, you know, Ashley shooting and her family. I've spoken with her family at length. In fact, I owe her mom a call. She called me last week. I haven't called her back. We'll see what happens with that, but I think I've made my opinion clear.
Yep, and as a minister friend of mine years ago said, we were kind of doing the same thing. We were going through a laundry list of tales of woe and concern. And he turned to me and said, hey, listen, let me cut to the chase for you. God wins, right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So no matter how bad, no matter how screwed up or crazy like you, there's redemption. And we know how the story ends. And we're going to be on the right side of it.
Yes, sir.
So I want to thank you very much for your time. It's
thank
been a
you,
great
bro.
Talk. All of our viewers and listeners, I hope you enjoyed this interview. Please be sure to subscribe to us, leave us a rating, talk to us. Let us know who you want us to talk to, who you want us to interview, what topics you want covered. But mostly, I want to express my deep thanks to you, Congressman Clay Higgins from the 3rd District of Louisiana, for taking the time to talk to us today. And thank you very much
yes,
for
sir.
Joining us.
God bless you. Thank you.
I'm Chris Farrell, On Watch.
Thanks for listening to Chris Farrell's On Watch podcast. For more information, visit www.judicialwatch.org, because no one is above the law.